Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Joanne Samrani. Joanne Samrani co-authored Breaking Bread with the Boscos, a collection of family memoirs and recipes. Her chapbook, entitled Grounded Angels, won the 2001 Acorn Ruckeiser Award. Samrani's poems have appeared in journals such as the Loyal Hannah Review, the Pittsburgh Quarterly, and Z Miscellaneous. She has poems forthcoming in Main Street Rag and the Sandberg Live Say Anthology. Hi, Joanne. How you doing?
Hi, Jan. Fine, thank you.
Okay, we're going to get started with poems from your award-winning collection, Grounded Angels.
Okay. I'll start with the title poem, Grounded Angels. There's a couple of Italian lines in it, and I'll first read them in Italian and then repeat the lines in English. Grounded Angels. They have been standing here for over 30 years. Grandma seems taller than the rest. Perhaps Aunt Angie stuffed paper in her shoes, like she did for Cousin Mark the day he wanted to ride on the roller coaster in Kennywood Park. It is cold standing under their shadows. My mother offers to button my worn overcoat, but I cannot reach her extended hand. Uncle Pellegrino hides in the corner, covering another rolling rock. The sisters are disgusted. I see it on their faces. Things haven't changed much here. Uncle Quill argues with the stranger in dark glasses over President Bush's energy plan, as if that would matter at all in that place where they are going. I recognize the music made by the man with two missing fingers and a golden saxophone. He has been standing here the longest, and still Grandma has not called to him. Mio figlio, vieni qua, my son, come here. I could swear Aunt Lucy just tapped my shoulder. When I turn around, I see a single yellow butterfly floating above my head. All aboard, the conductor calls as Grandma lowers her baby Alfred from her arms onto the platform, then unknots the white handkerchief pulled from the faded blue smock covering her breasts. Uno, one, due, two, tre, three, quattro, four, cinque, five, sei, six, sette, seven, otto, eight. She still has two coins left. She motions to the conductor to go on without them. She will wait for her other two children, the two standing with me across the tracks. When Love Speaks. Love says, I did not promise you hands touching silver hair, nor even one more moon to wrap around your dark dreams. You remember that last night when I ripped the black tangles from your swollen skin and sucked the poison from the red line moving toward your heart. You cried out in pain, and I was merciful. I gave you back your wings, then blew you to the wind. I shouted, fly, fly, you fool. Don't look back, because I won't be there. Let the wind carry you forward before your wings snap and you fall in a foreign place, somewhere you did not intend to land. Now you want me to save you from falling, but it is too late for saving. I have warned you of bees, yet smell the honey on your breath, and of spiders who hide your nakedness under their spool of magic thread. Did you not hear me? Think of how I caught you. Think of how I freed you. Think of me hiding my own nakedness under my spool of silver threads. This next poem was written in the fall. I always hated fall because my mother wanted me to can tomatoes with her. And the title of it is Canning Tomatoes. My husband wants me to can tomatoes with him, and suddenly I am in that damp basement on Wayne Street. Mother wears a stained apron. My sister and I timidly wait for our signal to begin. The first slit of skin, the exposed pulp. Acid burns our nostrils. Bell jars boil on a blackened stove. Their steady clink threatens summer's end, like the shrill of cicadas through our screen door. I turn to my husband and say, "No, I am afraid of not sealing lids tight enough. Boiled water toppling, jars shattering, smeared hands sifting through chunks of tomatoes, not able to put the pieces back together again." This poem was written after a visit to my mother in the hospital several years ago. I want to be one of those green beans in the photograph on the fifth floor of Shadyside Hospital. I am tired of running a marathon with the digital clock in my bedroom, tired of brushing my teeth and flushing someone else's waste down the commode, tired of smiling at irate customers and reading business letters with too many words, tired of covering too many wrinkles with too much makeup and catching my new pantyhose on an open desk drawer, tired of watching people I love grow old and weak, shriveling in their thin, worn skin. I want to be one of those green beans in the photograph on the fifth floor of Shadyside Hospital, tossed from some old farmer's stained apron to the wind, fresh and fat, exposing my bulges, free and unashamed, strings dangling from my long body like unattached umbilical cords, too high to be reached, too high to be picked and snipped and shoved in a can, left to drown in pickling juice, soggy and limp as the rest.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Joanne Sam Rainey, reading from her chapbook, Grounded Angels. You know, I really love the use of Italian in your work, and it's not just in that one poem, but it comes up again and again. Can you talk about the choice to include Italian in your work? I know it's definitely a part of your heritage, but...
Well, it is so much a part of my heritage that I feel it's necessary to get the full effect of the meaning in the poem, and that's why I include it. My grandmother spoke Italian to my cousin and I when we were young, and we would answer her in English and have a great conversation. And I just do it because I just think it's more effective.
Mm-hmm. Do you speak Italian?
I don't speak Italian. I don't speak Italian at all. I can understand some of it, but I don't speak it.
Mm-hmm. But it was spoken to you as a child.
It was spoken to me, and of course it was in dialect, and so I understood it that way. Mm-hmm. And I responded in English, and my grandmother understood that. So mm-hmm. it worked well for us. Mm-hmm.
And from what area of Italy was your family from?
They were from Naples and, Naples.
Okay. Well, that sort of brings up the subject of legacy, which is really big in your work, specifically, you know, the particulars of what is left behind in terms of family and story. Seems to me it's sort of a main subject of your work. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Well, I think it is the legacy, what is left behind and what we carry on with us and pass from generation to generation with, of course, some changes, hopefully some changes because nothing really stays the same. But there's some important things that I learned as a child that I would like to pass on to my children. Mm-hmm. And hopefully I do.
Mm-hmm. Do you have some poems that address that, or can you say what a couple of those things are?
Well, I think the main thing was love. I mean, obviously love. And I think that in my family, especially on my mother's side, we had a very, well, the women in our family were very, very strong. Mm-hmm. And they kind of held things together. And they were ahead of their time as far as being more progressive toward working outside of the home and having a voice in what was done in the home or wherever, and just finding themselves.
Mm-hmm. You have a great poem entitled Julia. I don't know if you have that.
Yes, I do have Andy. It with me.
Okay.
Would you like
can
to
you
hear?
Read that? Yeah.
Sure. Julia, I watched the wringer washer in our cellar on Wayne Street, unable to stop the rusty agitator. It thrusts my blue sundress from side to side while you fill both laundry tubs with cold water. Be careful of your fingers, you warn, as I untangle my dress from the machine and squeeze it between two wooden rollers. It drops down into the first rinse. Much like your hand slumps back into the wave of your blue negligee this afternoon as I bend over you, remove the red ruby from your cold finger, then kiss your closed eyes, green like the ocean and miles away.
I love the tenderness in your poems when you talk about family, because, you know, many people write these poems and they get kind of sentimental, and you don't do that. So I really admire that.
Well, thank you. I try very hard not to be sentimental, and that's why I think I rely a lot on image, mm-hmm. which helps that.
Why don't you read some more?
Okay. I'm going to read a few more family. This next poem was actually given to me by my son when he was a teenager. What I did was just record what he said to me. Your path. You tell me you walk straight, ahead of me, behind your father. If you fall, I catch you. If you veer left or right, I center you. If I walk next to you, you cannot focus. Ahead, your father holds on to the leash around your neck, pulling hard. You say this leash grows longer when you disagree. I say, be kind, my son. Soon your father's eyes will deceive him, and you will run ahead while I walk behind with him. For now, your father needs something to hold on to. This poem came from a dream. Moon's Child. My swollen body floats in this shallow pond. Fish with teeth sharp as my father's nibble at my feet. My feet belong to the fish living under the moon. It is the moon who mirrors the face of my mother. She sits on a rock. She laments, we must be like fish. We must swim upstream. Her tired arm tugs at the black net twisted between my thighs until threads break and water pulls the graceful body of my daughter away from me. Upstream she swims. Her young breasts float like soft white lilies. Her small pink mouth opens and closes like the mouth of a fish. Alrighty. Returning. Before you leave, I want to tell you how it feels to dip a tiny sponge in water and watch your tongue search for mother's breast. Before you leave, I want to tell you how it feels to close my eyes as you lie naked in pain. Once you covered your eyes while I labored to birth the grandson named for you. And now, with you, I breathe to machines ticking your life away. You put your hand in mine and say, I want to go home. But before you leave me, please tell me how your daughter can't become her father's mother. Okay, I'm going to switch around a little bit here. I had it right here. A few years ago, my husband and I visited Italy, and this poem came out of it. Outside the Basilica. Poetry is the sad eyes of children begging in the streets of Rome. Stealing is the art they learn from their gypsy parents. What they know, what they will give to their children, a way to survive the gold glitter inside the basilica. They are the sacrifices offered by their parents, their small brown bodies taken from warm beds to lie in the laps of women with slick hair, faceless behind newspapers as their sons slice the traveler's bag, pull out the day's indulgences.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Joanne Samarini, reading her poetry. Joanne, I wanted to ask you about the images in your work. You brought that up a little before, but there is a dreaminess to your work, and sometimes it takes the form of an actual dream within the poem, or sometimes these metaphors that are pretty evocative and watery. There's a lot of water. And, you know, I love that fish poem. There's fish with teeth and these nets and all this stuff moving around. But one thing I like about these dreams and this dreaminess is that it's not all beautiful. You know, we don't just have the fish and the beautiful thing happening with the mother and daughter, but there's fish with teeth, which I like. You don't whitewash everything. So can you talk about this, how you arrive at these places in your work? Like, what draws you to the dreamy rather than sticking with the concrete details in your work?
A lot of my work comes from dreams. In one way, I think dreams are more real than actual or waking hours. It's funny because I think images say so much more than just plain words, and images and dreams are so wonderful. And life really is part good, part bad, and I think dreams address that. And I love to go to bed and dream. That's my favorite thing. I guess, you know, it's your subconscious, but anything can happen in a dream. And sometimes in real life, it's kind of mundane, and mm-hmm. I love dreams.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, a lot of times people won't acknowledge the negative when they're speaking, or they want to make everything nice and sweet, but in the dreams, it comes out.
That's right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it needs to come out. It needs to come out.
It does. Well, that's leads me to this other idea I was thinking about with your work, which is this idea of doubleness. There's this doubleness of what is treasured and what is lost that keeps coming up in your work. And I guess that's similar to what we're saying, you know, the good and the bad. Mm-hmm. But it seems to show up in your work as what is treasured and what is lost, and they seem to show up together in a very poignant way.
I'm not quite sure where you're going with that. The treasured legacies from my past, the lost legacies.
What was treasured about the mother, and what was lost?
Right.
You know, that kind of, you know, in remembering what is no longer here, it seems like all the positives are remembered. At the same time, the mourning happens. You know, it seems like you bring these things together.
And again, it's just a reflection of life. There's things that happen to you that you carry with you that are very good and positive and comforting. And there's other things that aren't so comforting. And some of my earlier poems concentrated more on the negative side, I think. And the newer poems are going more toward the positive side of life.
Really? Because a lot of beginning writers will focus only on the positive and not let anything negative in. But I do remember some of your raging early poems.
Oh, right.
I do.
Right.
Now that you brought
that up. And in fact, you know, I was trying to find a few of them, you know, to bring with me, but I was unable to. And maybe that's just as well because.
Well, why don't you read some more of what you have? You have plenty more here.
Well, I hope this next one speaks for itself. Let it speak for itself. Even at 5, I felt the shame of running topless in the rain. It was the way Eddie looked at me, the way my small nipples stiffened when he gave me his big tooth smile, the way I ran to hide in the alley where I sat alone, one arm wrapped around my chest, the other pulling at the frayed elastic on my cotton underwear. And here's a kind of a different one. Speaking, well, I don't know if it's really duality, but it addresses the boredom of everyday life. It's in two parts. The first part does that, and the second part speaks to our own mortality and the threat of that always hanging over us. Truth. 1. Truth is a stranger to a man who tells us how to love a woman, sets her table each morning, puts 2 plastic plate mats on a burgundy tablecloth, places the blue embossed plates in the middle, spoon and water glass on the right, fork on the left, kisses her as she leaves for work. 2. In the car, last night's supper sticks in her throat. A steady burn persists in her stomach. She adjusts the rearview mirror. A sagging face glances back. There are so many cars behind, an empty highway ahead. She turns on the ignition, revs up the engine, thinks blue, the color of blood, before it leaves the body. And my green velvet purse. It is gradual, the shrinking, as the expanded wires lock under the gold clasp, concealing my popsicle pink lipstick, the bluebirds embroidered on my laced handkerchief, and of course the rosary beads. Mother warned, never go anywhere without your rosary, as though those cold, hard crystals could bring me comfort. There is no comfort in crystals, only in the touch of exposed velvet gathering at the opening where the whole being comes together under that crucial cap of gold.
I love how you bring everything back to the body, you know, sometimes subtly and sometimes not, like the poem you read before the last one, where you talk about, I think, blue, the color of blood before it leaves the body. Mm-hmm. Nice lines there.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. We have time for just a couple more.
A couple more? All righty. This is one of those not so pleasant memories from the past. Mrs. Angelo's daughter. The ants don't seem to mind me here beside them, playing with my paper dolls. They say my ears are big, but my head is small. They say Mrs. Angelo will bake cookies for my Holy Communion. But Mrs. Angelo scares me. She hurt Kathy. They say Kathy went to the hospital to get sewed back up. They say Kathy wears too much makeup, stays out all night, drinks too much. Drink, drink, I shout at my paper dolls. No one hears me. I tell my paper dolls, hurry, clean up the blood. I hate that old coat hanger. It made Kathy cry, turned Kathy's legs red like her pretty long hair. I name my red-haired doll Kathy. I don't want Mrs. Angelo to bake my Holy Communion cookies. And one more. All right, this is a little happier. Grandma, you have followed me to Cordova, New Mexico. Together we walk the years down another dirt road in Verona, Pennsylvania. When the blue bandana lifts strands of silver from your parched face, your calloused hands pick raspberries creeping from wooden fences, plop them gently into your folded apron. Cousin Mary skips ahead, bouncing pick and shovel. I lag behind, spilling water from filled buckets. Life was simple then, Grandma, as it is here, walking through these bean fields, brown earth at our feet, soft sky caressing our heads. Ascension. I want to look in that room one more time before my dark eyes shut their lids and bury the old mahogany bed draped in the desert linen of your grandparents. I want to watch our naked bodies glisten in the vanity mirror as your hands cup my soul, unraveling its smallest details like a spool of colored thread. And your mouth covers my fevered flesh like a soft poultice. I want to hear you whisper my name again and again. This time, I will erase time, flashing like flames. This time, the fire in my heart will burn your tears to ashes that ascend in clouds where the air eats everything.
It's the poetry of Joanne Samrini, reading from her book, Grounded Angels. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me, Jan.
It's wonderful. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Lauren Wolf and Joseph Wilk. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, here on Independent Public Radio, 91.3 WYEP.